talking. Okay, so my goal is to get done next week and have the last week, Tuesday and Thursday, open labs, which Lindsay and I will both come to. Hopefully Lindsay can.
I'll be here.
Yep. So Lindsay and I will both come to the open labs. And then your final, I don't know what day your final will be on. I haven't looked at the final schedule yet. But you get your final 1 week ahead of time. It's a take-home final. I'm trusting you not to work with anyone else. The only one you can ask questions about the final all about is me. And so, essentially, you'll get the final a week ahead of time. It's an open note, open book final. If you come in to take the final on the day the final is scheduled, you'll find that I'm not here. And the only other people that will be here are people that got confused just like you. Okay? So, nobody will be here. You are taking the final online. You have 1 week to do it. I will tell you that it has to be passed in by the scheduled time that the final starts. So if the final is scheduled to start at 10:15 on a particular day, I need to get the final by 10:15 on that day, or it's late.
So wait, you can pass it in earlier, though?
You can pass it in as early as you want to.
Okay,
but it has to come in. Yes, I'd love it if you passed it in early, because then I can correct it early. Okay, so yes, you can pass it in as early as you want. I'm slowly but surely getting caught up on homework. I had a stomach bug Monday that I never left my bed. So I am falling behind, but I've got some left to go, and I'll probably get them done Friday or Saturday. Yeah.
Is it a cumulative final?
Yes.
From the beginning?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But it's open notes, open book. So you're welcome to do all the research you want to do. The only thing is you can't ask anyone else. Okay? You have to do it on your own. But it's a cumulative final. It's questions from, you know, there'll be a question about HTML. There'll be a question about databases. Now, what I do is I have a certain number of the questions are required. And then the others are optional. So you can pick and choose to get up to 110 points. If you earn over 110 points, I stop correcting. Okay? So you can do the whole final, and that would be worth well over 110. But the required can't be substituted. If you skip one of the required, you've lost the points for the required. You can't make them up by doing an extra optional. Okay? So there are a certain number of questions that are required, and then the rest are optional, and you can pick which ones you want to do out of the remaining questions.
Well, if we do them all, it just beefs up the grade.
Right, except that, again, if you skip a required that was worth 15 points, you can't go higher, that you've got to lose that 15 points.
Yes.
Okay? So, anyway. Questions? Okay. So bring up, and I should have been doing this while I was talking, bring up Visual Studio. Okay, I'm going to look at first department array. Okay, so the one that says department array. Then I'm going to look at the read write. And then there's one I believe is in next that I will get to if I have time. Although it might be in this VB, I can't remember. So I may have to look. But for now, we're going to do the department array and the one that says project write, and the project that says Read Project. So those are the ones that you should download if you haven't downloaded them all by now. So the first one I'm opening is Department Array. Open Visual Studio first, the way I did. Usually it works fine if you just click on the SLN, but he's getting something. Yeah.
If you're on, this happened to me the other day while we were having lab time. If you're on Visual Studio and you're working on something, and you realize that you didn't select Visual Basic, but you selected C Sharp.
Right.
There's no way to revert it. You have to start over, right? Because I just screw it.
I think you'd, yeah. I don't think there is. Yeah, be sure when you open Visual Basic that you choose Visual Basic, because Visual Studio supports a whole load of languages. Okay? And if you're doing a create in Visual Basic, only you have C Sharp clicked, it's going to do some rather strange things.
I added a bunch of stuff to my form, and then when I clicked on the code, I was like, what's this?
Exactly. So yes, be sure when you start a new project that you pick Visual Basic as the language that you're using, because Visual Studio supports a bunch of different languages.
It's not on this computer, Visual Studio. And I'm looking at it, and it's actually Windows Vista, so somebody changed something on this computer.
Okay.
So I told them to try that one.
Yeah, right. I will try to remember to let you try to remember, too.
Yeah.
To let them know. Okay, so I've got department name, and I've got a place for department number, and when I say get department name, it should give me department name. This is very similar to the example that we looked at in JavaScript, okay? So what we're setting up is an array. And an array is probably something I will want to use in more than one place on my program. So I'm defining it globally up here. And remember, if I put it right under public before the subroutines, it's a global definition. And a global definition means that it's available anywhere. So I've said dim department name, and I just made up that. I could have said dim apples. But I'm saying dim department name. Five means the maximum that I am going to use. Now, there is actually, in Visual Studio, a department name zero that it will set up. But I don't want to use it, so I just didn't put anything there. Lots of times people actually put something in and they say department name, parenthesis zero, equals not valid, or something like that, to tell that the zero is not valid, yes.
What's the difference between using an array and, say, using an count?
Well, I'll tell you about my first programming job. My first programming job, I got trained for a week and a half, and they sent me back and said, okay, stop programming. And the one I was doing was I had to come up with, it would give me a number for the month, and I had to come up with a day. So I sat down, I understood if statements, sorta. And so I said, if number equals 1, make it January. If number equals 2, make it February, etc. And that was a whole string of code. And my boss said it would have been easier to set up an array because then you can just, it's a far less cumbersome piece of code than having this if statement with 12 if statements. So yes, you can probably get out of an array in lots of cases, but it's just a more effective and efficient way of doing it. So, I set up the array, and I said, if it comes in, if the department number is a 1, I want girls. If it's a 2, I want boys. 3 is infants, 4 is toys, 5 is books. So I set it up that way. And I have to use those numbers because department name is being reused over and over and over again. And if I try to say department name equals girls, department name equals boys, and kept going, then department name would end up being books because that was the last one that I assigned, and it would be books. So if you're using a name multiple times, you have to use an index. Okay, and again, this is like it was in JavaScript. This is an index. It can also be called a pointer. It can also be called a subscript. Index is probably the most valid name, but it can be referred to as an index, a subscript, or a pointer.
Is that the number or the name that you made?
The number.
Okay,
so the number, department name modified by 1 is girls. So what I'm doing is I'm setting up an array, and I've got actually 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, and the first one has girls in it. The next one has boys. The next one has infants. Toys. Books. 0, I put nothing in because I didn't define it. If I put it up here, I could have said department name, parenthesis 0, equals not valid, or something like that. But I chose to not set it up. So that's what the array looks like. So I have basically set up this collection of department names. And depending on what the department number is, I'm going to get a different department name. Okay? So when I come to actually running this and click the button that says get the name, I check and see if the value of the department number that the person entered in is greater than zero. And if the value of the department number is less than six. So that makes it in the range of 1 to 5. And I know that I have an answer for them if they put in something in the range of 1 to 5. If they put in something outside that range, then it would essentially cause a problem if I didn't check. So if they put in an 8, there is no department name with a subscript or index of 8, and so it would crash. So what I'm doing down here is ensuring that I get a number that is greater than 0 and less than 6, so therefore I'm getting a valid number. Yeah?
You already answered it.
Okay.
Because you put an AND statement between 0 and 6, it covers you from negative numbers.
That's right. Yeah. So I'm really fine-tuning the range and saying it has to be greater than 0 and less than 6. Okay? If I was confident that people were not going to put in a negative number, I could put in the department name 0 up here and just do the check for less than 6. Okay? But as I've said before, you should assume that your user is stupid, okay, and is going to enter the wrong information. Okay, no insult to the user, you just should assume that. Okay, assume that it's a chimpanzee at the keyboard or whatever you want to assume, but don't trust your user because everybody makes mistakes. And if you're not, your job is to cover and make sure that you let them know when they make a mistake, or at least you don't mess things up when they make a mistake. Okay. So, if it's a valid number, then I take that number and say, go get the department name that that number is pointing to. So if they put in a 3, when they put it in, then I'm going to say, okay, department name modified by 3 is infants. Okay? So department name, and then I take the number they put in. And if it's a 3, it's department name 3, which is infants. If it's not greater than 0 and less than 6, I put out the message invalid department number. When I want to clear out the places where the user entered information or where I put information. And so I put the name of the field, .clear, parenthesis, parenthesis. That parenthesis, parenthesis means it's a function. And behind the scenes, Visual Basic has a clear function that will empty out the slot you pointed to. So, if I now run this, got your picture?
Yep.
Okay, so if I now run this, come on. It really will. Yes.
They need a vacation.
Huh?
They need a vacation.
That's right. Okay, so again, if I put in a 3 and I press get department name, it comes back with infants. Okay. So I put in a 3 and then I said, okay, 3 is greater than 0 and less than 6, so it's valid. So go to the array called department name and use the 3 here, and that will extract infants and assign it to the department name. Okay. So the department name text box on the form then picks up infants. Okay. If I put in a 5, it picks up books. And if I put in an 8, it picks up invalid department number. Okay. So it picks up invalid department number. Now, if I took all of this code out, just a sec.
Yep.
I'm going to take that out and this out and this out and this out. So I'm just leaving there, do take the department name, take the department number, use it as an index. So again, if I put in the 3, I'm getting infants. It's working just fine. But if I put in an 8, actually, let me take a picture of that. If I put in an 8 and say get department name, come on, it crashed. Okay. And it says index was outside the bounds of the array. So that's the message it came back with. It said the index was outside the bounds of the array. The bounds of the array go up to 5. I put in an 8, and so it crashed. So by putting in the if statement, I've handled the error as opposed to letting the program crash. And that's what I want to do. I want to handle the error such that I tell the user you put in the wrong number and they can try again, as opposed to having the program crash. Did I manage to answer yours or not?
No, I was just wondering, how could you stop them from putting a decimal?
You can convert it to an integer.
Okay.
Because C-I-N-T will convert to an integer. So if you're worried about that, you can put in a convert to an integer.
Would that be
instead of the val, you could say convert to an integer val, you could put C-I-N-T. Okay. And that will convert it to an integer and then check to see the range. If the range is valid.
Val is decimal C.
Val is anything.
Yeah.
Val is anything. C-I-N-T is integer. C-D-B-L or C-D-E-C for decimal or double will work with actually anything, but they're designed to work with decimals. But if it's an integer, they don't care because a decimal number can be a whole number. Okay. Notice how nice Visual Basic is to you compared to JavaScript. It highlighted the line that was wrong, and it told you the index was outside the bounds of the array. Sometimes the message is a little more cryptic than that, but at least it tries to help you solve the problem. Okay. So then I can go back in and fix that by taking out the comments and I now have back to a working model. Okay. Questions? Okay. So an array really is just a collection of data. And again, a lot of times people use it for months if they want it, and they have 1 through 12 in January through, and they have the array set up this way. Arrays can be very complicated. Arrays can be very handy. We're giving you just a very simple one. It is a lot harder, for example, if the department numbers are not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay? It's fine, but in our little two-week visit to Visual Basic, we're not getting into that. But if you go into Visual Basic, then you have to deal with the reality that it may be department numbers that are not in sequence. It may be a department code, like CI and so forth, and you can handle all those things. But as I said, we're not going to handle them in a two-week introduction. Okay, questions on this program? Okay. Then we're going to open the right one. Okay, what we call information technology or computing or whatever started out being called data processing. And there was a reason for that. Its main function was to process data. And that's still the main function. Okay, we want to process data. We want to create tables of data. We want to access those tables of data. If we didn't access data, then the best we can do is take user input, calculate an answer, tell them what the answer is, and move on. And that's not terribly practical, okay? There's not a lot of things where I just want to put in data and get an answer. I can use a calculator for that, numbers, okay? So basically what you're concerned with most of the time is processing data, okay? Now, data can be on a database, in which case you have tables of data. And we looked at a database with a single table at the beginning of the semester. And next week, what we're going to look at is a database with multiple tables in it. So a database can have multiple tables. There's also something called files. And way back when, files were the way that we stored data, okay? And you stored the data on a disk, or before that you stored it on tapes, and you originated the data lots of times on those cards that you've probably never seen, but they are little manila cards with punch holes in them, and people would sit down at a punch machine and type the data into those cards, and it would punch the holes in those cards, and then the cards would be fed into the computer, and it would get its data that way, and then it would write it out on a tape, okay? So, essentially, data was handled in a lot of different environments. Now we use mainly disks, and putting it out on the server, up on the cloud, whatever. This particular program is handling just a file. A file is a standalone entity that I can put information on and then I can read information off. Okay? They are still used for kind of the quick and dirty stuff, but if you've got permanent data, it's probably going to be in the database. Okay. The code for how to handle a database is, again, beyond where we're going in a two-week class, but the code to handle a file is quite easy. So we're going to look at the code to handle a file. Okay. So, let's see if I can manage to show that whole thing. Pretty much. Okay, so what I've got here is I've got a routine called button write. Okay? And when I click on button write, I said, okay, I'm going to describe data write as a string. And it's going to be a string that is going to be equal to something I get from an ID number field on the poem concatenated with a comma, concatenated with something I get on the name field on a poem, concatenated with a comma, concatenated with something I get off the major field on the poem, concatenated with a VBCRLF, which is a carriage control line return. So what I'm going to end up with is a record on each line. And the record is going to contain an ID, a name, and a major. And then I do a carriage control line return so that the next record that I enter will be on the next line down. And the next record I enter will be on the next line down. So every record will get its own line. Then I say, and this is a pretty much copy and paste, okay, mycomputer.filesystem.writeAllText. So that tells me that I want to write. And then in parenthesis I say I want to write on the F drive. I want to call it by the name student F11, okay? And I am doing what is called, I'm taking the data write. Okay, so I'm taking the data write that I set up here. So this says on the F drive, write a file called this name and use that syntax. So get the thing that was set up with the department data write. And write it, and the true I believe just means if everything is fine. After I write it, I clear out the things on the form, and I set the focus back to the ID. Okay? So, I'm going to change the name up here to Spring 18. Okay, so I'm going to write out in Student S18, and I'm going to write that syntax. So, now I'm going to run it. So I hit the start, and here is my form, and it's got the three boxes. So I'm putting 111, and then I'm going to tab down and put John Doe, and tab down and CI. And then when I hit the write button, it gets written, cleared, and the focus returns to the ID. Okay? So then I'm going to put in 222, Susan Ash, CI. And again, I'm going to write. It will write it out, clear it out, and put the focus back on the ID, 333, Bob Costa, CI, write, and then I'm done, so I'm going to hit end. Okay, so what I've done is I have written out a file. Okay. So if I go into my F drive, where's my notepad? And I do a file open, and I go to my F drive, and what did I call it?
That's
the folder,
but it's
student. S18. Students S18, right here. And there it is. So there are the three records that I wrote out. And notice, I'll be with you in a second. Notice that it has the syntax that I said I wanted. An ID concatenated with a comma, concatenated with a name, concatenated with a comma, concatenated with CI, concatenated with line feed, carriage control line feed. So each of them is going on a separate line, and each of them is being separated by a comma. So that when I read them, I know that comma is the separator between fields. Yeah.
So two questions. Just when you put the plus to concatenate them,
yes.
How did that still push them down a line? Or is that the thing at the end?
The VBCRLF pushed them down.
So it's going to be a
because it's a visual basic carriage control line feed.
Okay.
CR stands for carriage control, LF stands for line feed. So that is the visual basic carriage control line feed that pushes them down onto the next line.
And I get the F drive. Obviously, you have to set
right.
it to whatever drive you want it. But the next two, Project Write Text, Project Write Text, are those both folders?
No, you saw it when it came up.
Oh, well, you don't have it anymore. So I don't even need that.
Right.
So you're only putting...
I put F drive, and then I didn't put it in a folder. If I wanted to put it in a folder, I could have put folder name / file name, but then I would have had to have an established folder. It's not going to create a folder for me. I would have had to have established a folder and then chose to put it in that folder. Okay, but I was keeping it simple, so I just put it at the root of the F drive. Questions? So I have now created a file, and that file is there until I make it go away, okay? And there are ways that we're not looking at, but there are ways to update that file. Whenever you have data, you should be able, and it provides that, but we're just not covering it, you need to be able to maintain the data. And maintaining data means I need to be able to add records, I need to be able to change records, as in change the data. So if Susan Ash changes to a BU major, I need to be able to change that. And I need to be able to delete records. Okay? So once you have a file, maintenance, and let me take a picture and then I'll write. Okay? When you're dealing with data, you need to be able to do maintenance. And that is frequently called updating the file. And when you update a file, you need to be able to add records, change the data on the record, to be able to delete records. Because if you just create a file or a table and you can't maintain it, then the file is out of date almost as soon as you've completed it. Okay? So you need to be able to have the ability to maintain it. Yeah.
What happens if you put something in the parenthesis after clear? Like you want it to clear and say something, like for the... We did a question on snow, if you wanted it to clear and just put inches. Or is that parenthesis there just to let it know?
It's there to let it know it's a function, and I honestly don't know what would happen if I stuck something in there, because I've never tried it.
I just think it's stupid stuff.
You know, what I'm doing is saying, take the field that is defined as the text ID number and clear it out. Which means turn it into spaces, the content into spaces. And that's its purpose. I can't think of any reason why I'd want to put something in there. Okay. If I want to change it, then I would just do a text ID number dot text equals and change it.
And like you said, that's just there to say it's a function anyway.
It's a function, right. It's telling it that it's a function. So now the next thing I'm going to do is I am going to read, because if I've got a file, now I want to read the file. Okay. So I'm going to go back and do a file close solution and a file open solution. and I'm going to open the one that says Project Read Project. Now, the first thing I need to do is change the name that I have up there to Spring 18 so that it knows what file it wants to read. And I named the file that I wrote Spring 18, so I'm changing this to Spring 18. Now, a lot of this is copy and paste, and that top line is copy and paste. Dim My Reader is new Microsoft Visual Basic file editor text file of Plaza. If you have asked me to write that, I couldn't do it. Okay, I have no idea what I would write up there. But I'm a good copy and paster, and that's where I feel, well, actually I'm not even good at that. But I would go ahead and try and hope and copy and paste, okay, from a previous. And when I was writing these kinds of things often, I usually have a file on text file that has all of the things that I want to copy and paste in it and make life easier. So I'm dimming My Reader as text field parser, which means I can go in and parse out the fields that are in this file. Okay. Now if you go down at the bottom, this is copy and paste too, except for the comma there. The comma tells it what the delimiter is. And remember, I put a copy between fields. I mean, a comma between fields. If I had put an asterisk between fields when I wrote it, then my delimiter would be an asterisk. If I had put a slash between fields when I wrote it, my delimiter would be a slash. So when I wrote it, I did the concatenate with a comma. So I'm telling it the comma is the delimiter, meaning the comma that tells me when one field ends and another field begins. It's the delimiter. Okay? So then when I click on the button read, notice I did that in form read load. Okay? Form read load. So if I come down here, this is form read load. And notice the load is up here. And that tells me that I am doing it on the load, okay? If I click on this one, button read click, I'll see the click up there. Because it's the click event, this is the load event. Okay, so this is the load event. When it's being loaded, I have a load event. How do you get a load event? You click on any blank place on the form. You've set up your form, click on a blank area, and it will create the load event. Okay, so you just click on or double click on a blank area, and it will create the load event. So I did that, and it made the load event. Okay, and this sets the delimiter. Then I said, all right, dim current row as a string, and current row is going to be used here to put the data in. And then I say, if not my reader, dim my reader, if not my reader, same name. If not my reader, end of data. So that means if there is still data. Okay, if I've run out of data, then I'm done. So as long as there's still data, put the fields from the first record into current row. When it starts, it puts the fields from the first record in current row. When it hits us the next time, it will take the next record, the next record, the next record, the next record, and it will move through the records. Now, I've told it the delimiter is a comma. So it's saying, go to the current row and take the first field and put it in the ID number on the box. Then go and take the second field. And remember, 012 is first, second, third, because it starts counting with zero. So the one means take the second field and put it in the name. The two means take the third field and put it in the major. So I'm using the delimiter as the separator, and the separator then says take the everything before the first separator, before the first comma, and that's comma row zero. After the comma and before the next comma is comma row one, and so forth. And if you had 10 fields, then you could keep going up here to zero to nine. Yeah.
And that's setting a delimiter for what it's going to read? Because this doesn't have any commas in it.
Yes, this does have commas because it's reading the file that I wrote. And the file that I wrote has commas. Okay, so here's the file that I wrote. Whoops, not what I wanted. I guess I made that go away. What was it? Student 18. Come on, you can do that. There it is. So that's the file that I wrote, and now I'm saying read that file, because I'm saying up here, and I went the wrong place. Because I'm saying up here, the file you're reading is on the F drive, and it's called studentS18.txt. So it is reading that file. And so current row 0 is the 111. Current row 1 is the John Doe. Current row 2 is the CI. Because the comma is the delimiter, which is separating the fields. Okay, so the comma delimiter is separating the fields.
How does it know when it's another line down?
Because I defined it up at the top as having three rows and then the line feed. And if I had tried to put a current row 3 in there, it would have objected. I'm not sure how it would object, but we'll look at it and see what it does. Because I only defined three fields up at the top. So let's watch this run, and then we can play around with it and see what the errors might come up with. If not end of data, I did this. If it is end of data, then I put out end of file reached, and I put it out in label 1, which I didn't change the name of. And so label 1 is on that form at some point, and we'll look at that too. Okay, so if I run this, okay, and I say read, it reads the first record. And then I say read again, and it reads the second record. And I say read again, and it reads the third record. And I say read again, and I get that message, end of file reached. Okay? Yeah.
Now, this was just for reading the file. It wasn't for the purpose you said before of maintaining it.
No, like right.
If you needed to change their major.
Right. And we could write a program to do that, but again, that's beyond the scope of where I'm going in this class. But having a file means I've got information that I can use next week and the week after, and I can use this until I wipe out this file for some reason. And that really is what IT is all about, is dealing with data. On the web, JavaScript doesn't have the ability to deal with data very well. That you can add on something like Node.js and give it the ability to deal with data. But usually if you're going to deal with data, you get out of JavaScript and go into something like PHP, which is designed to be able to give you data on the web. And so if you want to deal with data, you go into a different language than JavaScript.
Okay.
Or you add in an app that enhances JavaScript so that it can be doing, it can do it. But again, the purpose of putting it out on the computer is really that you can keep large amounts of data. You can have it available to when you need it next. It's not a piece of paper floating around on your desk someplace that you don't know where it is, but it's got to be someplace and everything. Of course, you can also lose the file on the computer, which I've done more than once. What did I call that foolish thing? And where did I put it? Okay. But anyway, if you are a commercial organization, presumably you are more organized than that and actually know what the name of your database and tables and files is. Okay? So, there is the running of that. Okay, so now if I look at this form, okay, somewhere over here I saw the message come out, so I know it's over there someplace. If I come over here and look for label 1, I just found it. And so label 1 is right there. So when I say write it on label 1, it comes over to that spot and writes it at that spot. Okay, that's label 1. Okay, now you asked about what would happen, and I honestly do not know the answer. What would happen if I put in something else here? And so I don't have a place to put it, so I'll say make the text major.text equal to current row 3. Okay? So now we can try running that and see what will happen. Okay, so I read, and it immediately crashed. Index was outside the bounds of the array.
And that's even on the first one.
And that's on the first one because I did it on all of them. So as soon as it hit, take the fourth field, and said, wait a minute, there isn't a fourth field. And so it crashed.
It's even drawing a line to where it's incorrect?
That's usually right at the end. So it's usually not helping you quite that much. But it may be. It may be just that it was the last thing. Yeah? No, it looks like it actually is trying to point.
That's cool.
Okay. But the index was outside the bounds of the array, is the message that it's giving you. And it made an array. I didn't make an array. A lot of array work is handled behind the scenes. When it's got multiples of something, it turns it into an array. And here I had multiple fields. And so it was the one that figured out 0, 1, and 2. That's an array that I'm going to pick. So your record that you read is kind of going into an array, and the first field will be known as current row, because that was the name I gave it, current row 0. The next field is current row 1. The next field is current row 2. So it went in there and made an array behind the scenes of the fields that you had. Okay? So arrays are used by programmers, but it's also used by whatever language you're using to handle things behind the scenes. Questions? Thank you. So now I'm back with the working model. Okay. There was one more I wanted to look at, and now I'm going to have to go and figure out which one. Under next, I have project if test. I think it was that one. So under next, I have project if test. And I'm not really sure how much of it is different, but this gets into another look at if statements. So under the folder next, I've got project if statements, if test. Okay, so you can download that one as well if you'd like. Under the folder next, or it may have something else on it. What is it called? Next VB.
Okay, and then in there.
Under the folder next VB, there are two programs in this zip file. One of them has the word if in it, and that's the one I want. Okay, so this one has places for me to enter a branch, department, budget, how much I've spent, and how much I've committed on the budget. Okay, so I can tell how much out of my budget I've already spent and how much out of my budget I've already committed but haven't actually spent. Okay. Then I've got four different buttons that I can click on. And the four buttons return information to text boxes that I've set up to receive them. Okay? So, if I put in here, let me go over to this. Okay, so I'm going to put in branch 12, department 100, whatever. The budget is $10,000. I have spent $4,000 and I've committed $2,000. Okay. So, if I click this first button, it's going to execute button calculate. And it is telling me that what I have left is $4,000. Because I had 10, I spent 4, that got me down to 6. I committed 2, that got me down to 4. So I have $4,000 left that I can spend. Okay. And I probably should have picked something other than getting 4,000 again. So if I make this that I've spent 4,500, then I've got 3,500 left to spend. Okay. If I click on this calculate, then I have got two pieces of information. One is the sum of these two, 6,500, and one is the same thing, what's left, which is right there. Okay. So this time, up here I did what diff, and I defined it as global. I really didn't have to unless I was going to use it other places, and I don't quickly see it in other places, but I defined it as global. Down here I set up a whole lot of them, and I defined them as local, which means that other routines don't know that they even exist. Okay? Then I take and I do some calculation, I move some things actually into the work areas, and I do some calculations. So the spent plus the committed is that work from budget, and I put work from budget into the box called tax from budget. And then I do the subtract and put it into the box called text amount left. And if you go to the form and look at the boxes, you'll see that this is text amount left and this is text from budget. Okay? So I'm doing the calculations. Okay. Then I've got two routines that I do down here. And I think these are where they go. I'm assuming these are where they go, yes. So if you look at the bottom one first, I said button compound ABC. And again, remember I told you when you have a click event, click is up there. So this is telling you, if you look at this, button compound ABC, when I click on that, it will show that. I just did button calculate, and it shows up there. But when I put my mouse down on this bottom one, it will now show button compound ABC click event. Okay, so it tells you what routine you're in and what event it's dealing with up there at the top. Okay, so here I said, if text equals Boston and text amount budget is greater than 5,000, or text budget dot text divided by 2, all work total is greater than text budget divided by 2, then put out a sign that says meets criteria. Otherwise, does not meet criteria. So I'm saying Boston has to be true, and the parenthesis here means either. And either of those other two things have to be true. I don't care which, but one or the other has to be true. So Boston and either of those. Okay. One thing has to be true and either of two others is one of my things that I want to make sure you know, and I promise it will show up on the final, probably in multiple places. So be sure you're comfortable with that. Or ask me questions if you're not, because I promise you it will show up. Okay, the alternate way to write that is up here at the top with simple ifs. So I said, if it's equal to Boston. Now that's the thing that I said, Boston has to be true. So if it's not, it takes the else and says, does not meet criteria. Okay, so if it's not Boston, it's out of there. If it is Boston, then I said either of two things has to be true. Either text budget is greater than 5,000, in which case it says meets criteria. Or if it's not, I've got a second chance, is the total greater than the budget divided by 2? And if it is, it meets criteria. If it doesn't, then I'm out of here. And I'm saying does not meet criteria. Okay, so Boston, just a sec. Boston has to be true on both of these. Boston has to be true? And if the answer is yes, then I am asking, is the budget greater than 5,000? If it is, then it meets. If it isn't, I've got a second chance, and that is the total greater than the budget divided by 2? And if it is, it meets. If it doesn't, it does not meet. And if it's not Boston, it does not meet. So that's the logic that goes with both of these. One of them I wrote with simple ifs, and one of them I wrote with a compound if. Yeah.
I don't get how the and either has to be Boston. Because to me it says, if it's Boston, then it meets the criteria. Otherwise, if the total's greater than the budget, it still meets it.
No, this is saying, if it's Boston, which one are you looking at?
The and either, the one at the top.
Okay, this one?
Mm-hmm.
That one says, if it's Boston, then continue on. Which asks the next question. If it's Boston, continue on. Which asks the next question. So look at the flowchart. If it's Boston, yes, then I drop down and say, is the budget greater than 5,000? If the answer is no to Boston, I go to the else and put out a does not meet criteria. So I'm out of here if it's not Boston. If it is Boston, then I have 2 chances to meet the criteria.
It's not even going to get to that first else.
No, right.
It doesn't even go in.
It doesn't even go in.
Okay.
But if Boston is yes, and it does not meet the $5,000, it does not meet that, then I have a second chance. Does it meet this criteria? And if it does, then that's fine. I don't care which one. And down in the compound, I do that with parentheses. It's got to be Boston and either is in the parentheses. And this works this way because ands are resolved before ors. And if I took the parentheses out, then it would look at it as Boston and budget greater than 5,000, or just budget total greater than budget divided by 2. And I didn't finish up the drawing. Oops. You have to look. That's the correct way to draw it. I didn't notice that I didn't close up one of them. Questions? Okay, I will post a visual basic assignment tonight. I just wanted to make sure how far we got before I put it up. So I'll post your second visual basic assignment tonight. Next week, we're going to go back to Access and look at multiple tables and discuss the concept of how you do multiple tables a little bit. And then we're done. And I'm reasonably optimistic that we really will be done so that you can have the last week as labs to get caught up. Okay, questions? Because I'm not going to start another example, so we're all done.
So fast.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I feel like this one went by so much faster than the fall.
Yeah, it could have. This was not a good semester. I can't believe how many bugs I caught. I went down to visit my son this weekend, and he came down with a stomach bug. And Monday morning, I woke up with his stomach bug.